the red card.
Half it's there. And here's Hill. Ricky Hill! Beautifully taken. And Luton deserve their lead. Credit first of all to Harford for unsettling the defence. Then to Steen actually for holding one of the defenders off. But when it came out to Ricky Hill, that shot was unstoppable.
Yeah, that's Ricky Hill scoring for Luton in the FA Cup semi-final. The game ultimately went Everton's way, but you heard a few names. That was a cracking Everton side that David Pleat put together. Ultimately went on after he'd left to win the League Cup against Arsenal.
Yeah, that was a great game, wasn't it? Last minute.
Yeah.
Steen putting it in the corner.
Ricky's told his story now in his autobiography, Love of the Game, the man who brought the Rooney Rule to the UK, so we'll come on to shortly. Written in conjunction with our very own Adrian Durham. Good afternoon, Ricky.
Hey, Paul, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Max. How are you doing?
Mate. Yeah, we're good, Ricky. Enjoyed the book. Adrian's done a fine job. Was it a pleasurable experience, kind of going back through all the old stories? And did you enjoy it?
Joy and pain, Paul, to be honest. In respect, lots of positive memories, lots of happy memories, but then also lots of issues whereby have now come to the fore 40 years later in respects to how we managed to navigate ourselves through the system in the early days.
Yeah. I mean, as we've seen with many black players of your generation, the level of abuse that was meted out to you and others at that time. And you've been pretty graphic in the language. I don't think you should spare people the kind of language and the kind of stuff that was being shouted. It doesn't need asterisks. I think people need to know what was going on. And as you say, sometimes it wasn't just one or two lone voices that could be picked out by stewards. It was whole ends of fans, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, my first experience away at Burnley was one whereby I'm 17 years old. It's one of my first away games. I've gone out for the warm-up at 2:30 and I've heard a little smutterings here and there, bits of name-calling. But then come back at 3:00 and 3/4 of the crowd, which was probably about 12,000-13,000 at the time, they were singing songs about my ethnicity and, you know, using the N-word and the C-word throughout the game. And I was 17 years old. I looked at my teammates and they had sadness in their eyes, nothing they can do. But as far as I'm concerned, they were just trying to put me off my game, trying to enable their side to play against 10 men as opposed to 11. And as good fortune would have it, on the day I managed to score the winner to make it 2-1. And that kind of was the start, the initiation for a continued type of racial abuse that we receive in most away games.
17 is so young. I don't know. If you look back now, did you process it at all at the time?
Absolutely not. I've only recently just found out when I was writing the book that with AD, Harry Haslam made reference to it after the game in respects to I showed my mettle and I showed my mentality on the day that I could play the game at a high level. Now, I verse that as saying, well, how would Harry know respectfully, because he wasn't on the receiving end. And to date, as far as I know for sure, Paul and Max, that no coach or manager has ever made reference to the racial abuse that we received, you know, even privately. To say, well, don't worry about them idiots. You just get on with your game. It was just something that was a little bit taboo. No one really knew possibly what to say to comfort you. And so you were left on your own. You were left to tough it out. And unfortunately, if you couldn't handle that kind of vitriol, then you probably end up out the side and your career might have been over.
One of the other things that people wonder about you, Ricky, is why you never got that move. And you look at the some of the teams that were after you at the time, big clubs in this country and in Scotland and overseas. It didn't quite happen. And maybe there's a little bit of a feeling that David Pleat didn't want you to go and you may be priced out of a move. But your relationship with David Pleat is a good one. I see at the end in the acknowledgements you say, thank you, Gaffer. Even though, you know, some people could be bitter about that, but you don't feel like that.
It's that love, not hate, but just the love and the unknown in my respects, because I know David loves me as a person, as a player, his whole family. I've known his kids all my life because my Diggs lady, Mrs. Gough, who's passed away, her son was married to David Pleat's wife's sister.
Right.
And so I knew Maureen, and, you know, she passed away recently. I send my love and condolences to the family. But so David's known me since 15 years old, intimately, in respects to looking out for me. He's a very big reason with Danny Bergara that I was actually signed in the first place at Luton, when there might have been doubts about whether they should take me or not, and they really went to bat for me. But in regards to the moves as such, I only found out in latter years that clubs had come in, made inquiries. I knew for myself that Arthur Cox called me when I was about 19 years old in my flat in Cricklewood, and he said, would I come and play for the Geordies, Newcastle? I said, of course, Mr. Cox. He said, well, David knows what we think about you. We'll be in touch. Now, the age of agents were very not prevalent at the time as they are now. Obviously now, if the interest was there, the club would make overtures towards my agent and the agent would take it from there. In those days, it was the club would phone the club and the manager was in charge and had autonomy, and he would possibly say yes or no, or what you're talking about. In my instance, no, David never came to me once and said, we've had an offer that we're considering to take for you. Mm. He has said, so Bobby Robson used to put his arm around him every time he saw him and say, when are you going to sell me your boy Hill? He did tell me that whilst I was player. Mm. And also he told me Jim Gregory at QPR always wanted to sign me and was harassing him to let me be signed by him. And then Jim Gregory turned around and said, well, anyway, as far as he's concerned, black players are finished after the age of 27. So this is what David Pleat told me. Now, I don't know who else has called and who else haven't. I was close to signing for Atletico Madrid in 1986. With Ron Atkinson, went out there and was proposed to get the position, but the vice chairman we were in terms of the election, he didn't manage to get the job at that time. And at the same time, whilst I was there, I was speaking to Gerard Houllier, who was at Paris Saint-Germain. And Gerard wanted to sign me, but the president hadn't seen me play that season, although Gerard knew and seen me play regularly, and he wanted me there. So he said, get a clause in your contract of $250,000 that allows you to leave Luton at Christmas. Because in those days, France were allowed to sign one player at Christmas, called the Joker, they used to call it. And he said, we have a lot of money at Paris Saint-Germain, so get that in your clause in your contract. And if you go back to Luton, if the Atletico Madrid falls through, then we'll come and sign you at Christmas. Wow. My luck has it, Paul and Max, that Gerard started that badly at Paris Saint-Germain the following year, and he got fired before Christmas. Oh,
that so is the old fickle finger of fate, isn't it, with wanting to sign up. We do want to talk to you about one of the main aspects.
About the Rooney rule, you know, a big part of the book is, you know, your role as sort of devising an equivalent of the NFL's Rooney rule in English football. What has your role been in that?
Well, I would hazard to say I'm the visionary for it. It came around. I was on an assignment in Trinidad, again, away from home, away from the country that you were born in, that you served as a footballer and you're hoping to serve as a coach stroke manager. I was there. I took over from Terry Fenwick, who came back to Northampton for 7 games. I bet Terry wish he didn't have gone through that decision. But I saw a clip came up on ESPN, and it said that there's this new ruling concept that's going to be coming out in the NFL in the following month. This was February 2003, and the Rooney Rule was implemented in America in March 2003. So I was aware of it from there. I thought, what a great scenario this is, where it gets people within a door, which they've never really historically been able to get in, to speak to the powers that be. And it forces the powers that be to change their historical network that they've always relied on when vacancies have come available. So I thought, great, England's had the same issue. A number of our boys were told when we finished our careers, get yourself prepared, go and do your badges, so when the opportunity comes along, you're ready to take the opportunity. Mm. That was proven to be false to a degree, and we were misled slightly because there was no pathway there, even though numerous players from my generation, like Bob Hazel, Luther Blissett, Cyril Regis, Garth Crooks, all took their A licences 30 years ago, Chrissy Hughton, and it never materialised or developed into getting opportunities. So I thought, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to do my research. I'm going to, I went to America with Patrick Dix, Alan Dix's son, who was in charge of the football program at the Wide World of Disney Sports Complex, that's renowned worldwide, state-of-the-art complex. I met with Reggie Williams, who's an all-pro NFL linebacker, who was a visionary for the Wide World of Disney Complex. I met with a couple of guys from the Fitzpollard Alliance who had put the Rooney Rule together. I also met with Belinda Lerner, or Exchange Information, who was the NFL lawyer. And my idea was just to bring it to our governing bodies to say, well, here's an idea that at least it gives an opportunity for those who are qualified, who want to stay in the game, to perhaps be looked at and considered if they're suitably to be qualified.
But Ricky, you took it to the FA, you took it to the PFA. I know you feel slightly sidelined in that process. I mean, we're out of time, sadly, but I just want to ask you one final question. Here we are now. How far down the road are we? If a young black player said to you, you know, I'm thinking of going into coaching, would you say, yeah, it's so much better than it was in my day, go for it, I think there will be a pathway for it? Or do you not feel that anything's changed particularly?
100%, I'd say go for it, because that's your dream. That was my dream. I wanted to be a top-class player. I wanted to be a top-class coach. And I believe my record outside the country suggests I'm a top-class coach. And even in the country at my academy, stints at Tottenham and Sheffield Wednesday. Having said that, the pipeline, the pathway into the industry for from the racial perspective, the race diversity, hasn't been as fluid as we would have liked. Obviously, they put in the different rulings, different initiatives. Again, that hasn't made any change. I think the main crux will come from it's the sponsors. It's time for the sponsors to suggest if they want their money that they're supporting through all professional environments, then that professional environment should look like their industry, which practices the principles and values of diversity and race and inclusion.
Interesting stuff, Ricky. Look, lovely to talk to you. We wish you well with the coaching career, and we wish you well with the book as well. It's a good read. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Max. Thanks, Paul.
Cheers. Ricky Hill's book, Love of the Game, The Man Who Brought the Rooney Rule to the UK, Ricky Hill, written in conjunction with their own Adrian Durham. I'm sure I'll be telling you more about it a little bit later on.